Project Space Times.
Thank you. It's great to be back here. Well, it has a very large expansion. So I'll talk about works done starting in these papers, these first three with Mukund Rangamani, then the bigger one with a collaboration with Eric Gimon, Aki Hashimoto, Oleg Klumnin, and Mukund, and then finally, if I have time, with Mukund and Simon Ross. So these two are sort of tangential to black holes, so I might not have time to cover them, but I'll see where I get. So this is a workshop on superstring cosmology. So why do I want to tell you about black holes in asymptotically plane wave spacetimes, apart from being requested to do so by the organizers? Well, in the workshop, people considered sort of trying to understand cosmological singularities and models of inflation and various things in context of string theory. And indeed, many of us are hopeful that string theory will resolve the singularities, describe what are the sort of, how do you evolve through them, what are the initial conditions for the universe, and so on. But right now, the biggest obstacle that's hampering us is we don't have a fully sort of time-dependent, non-perturbative formulation of string theory that we would understand well. So instead of sort of asking about cosmological scenarios, I want to deviate a bit and ask about black holes in string theory, because the philosophy being that they are good toy models for cosmology. After all, they have all the similar ingredients, they have singularities, they have horizons, and inside the space-time is fully dynamical. And in fact, it might be just as hard to resolve the space-like singularity inside black holes as the cosmological one. You still need non-perturbative formulation of string theory, but it may be easier to study because we can embed black holes sort of more naturally in string theory. So the nicest formulation we have for that goal is the well-known ADS-CFT correspondence. So as you all know, that relates a theory of gravity string theory on particular space. We'll consider ADS-5 cross S-5 being dual to the gauge theory, which is fully non-gravitational, living on the boundary. So you can have black holes inside. So when you put in a black hole, that corresponds to a particular state on the gauge theory, a thermal state, and we can hope to study.
Just under the lens.
Oh, I see. We can study, hope to probe these singularities and horizons by looking at the gauge theory. Unfortunately, this is a strong weak coupling duality, and so even though we're trying to do this, what's hampering us here is that it's very hard to do any calculations because the gauge theory is strongly coupled. So it's hard to make progress, but fortunately, recently, Berenstein, Maldacena, and Nastase noticed that things simplify in a special limit of this correspondence. Namely, in string theory, if you take the so-called Penrose limit by looking very near a null geodesic, which would be sitting sort of at the center of ADS and going around the 5-sphere, you obtain in this limit a very simple geometry, which is called a plane wave. And well, in fact, you can write down the solve the worksheet sigma model. This is a very nice geometry. And in the gauge theory sector, well, in the gauge theory, you consider the large charge sector. And again, because of this near BPS nature, you can do perturbative calculations. So this is a very nice sort of limit that might allow us to get some handle on, this gravity gauge correspondence in some more computational way. So of course, to study a set of questions of quantum gravity, we would like to have black holes in this setup. And the first thing you might think of doing is, well, let's start with this setup and try to do the same procedure. Unfortunately, that doesn't work. If you try to take a Penrose limit of the Schwarzschild ADS black hole, well, basically the horizon is no longer there. And so you can't study black hole physics that simply. I should mention, by the way, that the singularity does remain for some specific sort of geodesics. So you might think of studying the singularity, but the black hole disappears. So to get a black hole, one has to do something. Well, we don't know what to do, actually. We don't have a black hole yet, but presumably one can consider somehow putting a black hole in this geometry that would have sort of this asymptotics, and then trying to figure out what that corresponds on the gauge theory side. So this will be the basic story. Let me take a bit of a detour into telling you what I mean by these plane waves and such like. And in fact, let me start by telling you about a more general class of spacetimes, the PP waves, and put the plane wave into context. So the PP wave is any spacetime with a covariantly constant null Killing field. So here I have written a metric. So DDV is a Killing field, and you have a special coordinate u and then any number of transverse coordinates, and you have an arbitrary function here, which is a function of u and the transverse coordinates. And for metrics of this type, they have this special null symmetry. Actually, all the curvature invariants vanish identically. And so well, in string theory, that's very nice because all the alpha prime corrections vanish, and so these are exact solutions to classical string theory. Now, the plane waves are a special subset of these. They have the, this function f is quadratic in these transverse coordinates, and that leads to this extra planar symmetry, which you can see even better by noting that, well, these spacetimes arise as a Penrose limit, where, well, a Penrose limit consists in any manifold. If you have a null geodesic, you can sort of zoom in on the null geodesic and then re-expand your coordinates. So this is the direction along the null geodesic, and then you generate this null Killing field by re-expanding the spacetime. So this encodes this sort of one-dimensional region of the parent spacetime, and so you have this still a lot of freedom in this metric. Now, the what I call the BMN plane wave, metrically, is a special case of these where this function f was maximally symmetric. It's just a constant in U, and it's just given by this form.
That
metric is not flat. Metric is not flat. So this is interesting. I mean, you might think naively that if
even
you have all the curvature invariants,
even Riemann square is zero.
Yes. Everything vanishes, but the Riemann tensor components are not zero. That's why it's not flat. In fact, it's very different from flat space. It has completely different causal structure and lots of very different properties, but all the curvature invariants vanish. So it's quite a remarkable class of spacetimes because it's sort of a counterexample to all sorts of intuition you might naively have.
This includes covariant derivatives of the curvature.
Yes. And everything that's an invariant, yes. Because, again, because of this null symmetry, well, if you think of it in components, things basically cancel out. But because of this null symmetry, you get basically zero norms.
But we include even cases in which there is a non-trivial Ricci tensor.
Yes, that's right. So, in fact, let me show you.
They're not Ricci flat.
No, they're not Ricci flat. In fact, if you consider... So this was the plane wave or more generally, this gets replaced by some arbitrary function. The only non-vanishing component of the Ricci tensor is the UU component. That's given by the Laplacian of this function f. So for plane waves, it's just a trace of this Fij. So that's the stress tensor. And so in particular, if you want vacuum plane waves, which for in this talk I'll denote by the script v in d dimensions, the subscript d, for these vacuum plane waves, this trace vanishes. And so in particular, these things can't be spherically symmetric. And conversely, these maximally symmetric plane waves that correspond to the BMN asymptotics can't be vacuum. They have some stress to support them. And just to, just a bit of a technicality, the stress, there's various stresses you can have to form the same metric. In fact, there's a family of solutions with in string theory in 10 dimensions with a combination of Ramon-Ramon 3 form and 5 form, and only a particular one particular member of this combination gives you the Penrose limit of this ADS 5 cross S 5. So this is just when you have the Ramon-Ramon 5 form. So this is the one that I would mean by BMN asymptotics. The BMN asymptotics consists of a metric being this maximally symmetric plane wave, but also by this matter support. So in fact, in this talk, the talk will have three parts. In the first part, I'll actually talk about all plane waves without requiring them to be solutions of any, or all the PP waves without requiring them to be solutions of anything. In the second part, I'll end up talking about sort of asymptotically a vacuum plane wave. And finally, in the third part, I'll get to the one that we want to get to, which is this maximally symmetric case. So let me just give you a bit of the outline. What's the sort of story that I want to tell? Well, in trying to find black holes in asymptotically plane wave spacetimes, one can ask first whether the spacetimes themselves can describe a black hole, can admit horizons. And in fact, you can ask the question more generally for the PP waves, since they are all classical, exact classical solutions. It would be nice if they were actually black holes. And unfortunately, the answer turns out to be no. So I'll briefly show you how to why that is the case. But given that, well, the spacetimes with covariantly constant null Killing field can't admit horizons, one can now hope that if you relax some of these constraints on this rigid symmetry, you can get horizons. And the first thing one can try is relax this covariantly constant requirement. And in vacuum general relativity, you can actually solve Einstein's equations with a null symmetry. But unfortunately, that also doesn't have any horizons. So you might think that null symmetry is still too strong to a requirement to get solutions with horizons. But that's actually not the case. There are extremal black holes which have null symmetry. And in fact, you can make them, so the answer to this question is yes. And in fact, you can make them asymptotically vacuum plane wave across some flat directions. So this is already better, but it's hard to sort of get the maximally symmetric plane wave asymptotics this way. So one has to do something different. And this is what I'll talk about in the last part of the talk, where I'll show you. Black strings. My apologies. I'll be using black holes very loosely, meaning that they have horizons, and that's all I require, if I misspeak. Thank you. They're black strings. Here, I also will consider only black strings, but now the asymptopia will be these maximally symmetric plane waves. But they will be, so they will be metrically BMN, but not yet with the, not quite with the right matter support, unfortunately. So we're not quite finished with the story of sort of putting black holes in BMN, but we're much further along. So let me.
Can I ask again about this exact conformal of formal invariance of the theory. I mean, what about the big mu mu, which is important to our mu mu? How do you know that that is okay to all orders in upper prime?
Sorry?
Mu mu is not, I mean, it's R mu mu plus stuff, right? So the leading order, this R mu mu, is cancelled by your Ramon theory, I'm sure. But how do you know it goes on forever and that the metric is not corrected?
Well, everything that you, every scalar quantity
no, but
that you can.
Mu is not a Lorentz scalar, it's a tensor.
Yeah,
but
it comes
it's
to the variation.
The beta of the G mu mu.
He needs a beta function.
The beta function related to the metric, to the work.
You can also show that all symmetric second rank tensors constructed from the curvature of powers and derivatives vanish, except for the Ricci tensor. It's not just the scalars.
Okay.
It's a strong
basic more to show that.
It's a little more work, but it's also true.
And it again comes from the same essential reason that everything is.
There's
no.
Also an argument, right, of Maldacena and from directly the strength
theory. Well, if you pull Maldacena, there's an argument from Amati.
But that I thought was the sourceless case. I mean, with R equals zero. I mean, the case that she described where Ricci is zero.
Magic showed for plane waves.
Yeah, but they were vacuum waves. Not with a support, with a source.
On the Sigmund Berkowitz plane probe shown there for the solution of string theory.
For plane waves.
For the supersymmetric.
Oh, so you did this with the floor.
I mean, there is an argument just for the form of the curvature that you can't construct any symmetric second rank tensor except the Ricci tensor.
Then you say the Ricci tensor is cancelled, the beta function, by the source, and then that's it. It stops it. Okay.
So let me first talk about the first question: can you have black holes in, can plane waves, or generically PP waves, be black holes? And well, for that I have to tell you what I mean by black hole. Of course, in asymptotically flat space, we all know what a black hole is. It's just this region inside an event horizon. An event horizon is just defined as the boundary of the past of this future null infinity. So physically, a black hole is just this region of space-time that's invisible to asymptotic observers. So if you don't have asymptotically flat space with this nice, this wasn't quite asymptotically flat. With a nice asymptopia, then you have to do something else. So you can loosely sort of follow the spirit of this definition and try to define a black hole as the region of space-time which is invisible to observers who are arbitrarily far in some sense. Now, of course, this is very murky. You have to specify what you mean by arbitrarily far. But, well, you might think that you just have to go far in to large values of the coordinates. Now, of course, that's if your coordinate patch doesn't cover the full space-time, that's no good. But for the PP waves, it does. And in fact, this definition sort of makes sense. And so we'll basically apply this spirit of a black hole and define black holes in PP waves as regions which you can't see from arbitrarily far away. Now, one caveat I should say is if you have a null Killing field, that, of course, describes orbits of null geodesics, and so it's trivial to get arbitrarily far along this v direction. So one has to require that one also has to get arbitrarily far in some other directions. So since I'll show that there are no black holes, let me give you a definition for.
Right. In the DMA case, can you use the control of entry there to define more rigorously what you mean by the
Yes, but so I wanted to concentrate on all of the PP waves. So, well, so you can still use the boundary, but there you can't just conformally, it's not conformally flat, so you can't just conformally rescale it, and so you have to do much more work to find the causal structure. So in the end, I think this is far simpler because you can just look at the causal curves in the spacetime and see, well, do they get stuck in some region or do they actually get out? But you're right, in that special case you could have, but in that special case you already know that it doesn't correspond to black hole. So I'll say that there is no horizon. If from any point in the spacetime there is some causal curve, time-like or null curve, that gets out to sort of arbitrarily large, both V and these transverse coordinates, X. And in fact, I'll show you can do this with arbitrarily small variation in U.
Is that same as saying that any free-falling observer anywhere in the space-time can see this signal from this region?
No. Let's see. Any free-falling observer? You're worrying where I plus is rather than scry is, basically.
If I think in terms of this coordinate system, that naturally has to do with...
So that's a global one that covers...
It's a global coordinate system. I think of observers that sort of appear static in this coordinate system that are a fixed value of x and have some natural light in u and v, those things have some acceleration.
Yes.
And so I'm just trying to think about how to separate out black hole horizons from Rentler horizon or some other acceleration of that. So I was curious what this condition looks like when phrased in terms of falling observers.
Well, here I'm not requiring any geodesics or anything. So this is any curve. So certainly you always have, okay, I should have specified, you can always have Rindler horizons. That is true, I think, for any spacetime that's at least causally sensible. But that's sort of trivial. So we want genuine sort of what I would loosely call as event horizons, even though we don't have asymptotically flat spacetimes, but regions which you can't see by sort of any observer. So the Rindler, if you have somebody, say, in flat space, if you have a Rindler horizon like this, the observer who comes here certainly doesn't see this, but there is another observer who certainly can see some region here. And so I'm saying this region is actually inside a black hole if no observer somewhere near infinity can see it. Basically, if there is some horizon and you have something else that right. cuts off the space-time.
The question is that in a plane wave, observers that sort of start near infinity in this coordinate system don't necessarily stay there. In many plane waves, they end up very quickly coming to the origin.
Yes.
So even if there's a signal that can't propagate out to coordinate infinity, it's possible that all natural free-falling observers would quickly come from coordinate infinity to some place in the center and then be able to see the signal and then might be able to observe. So I'm just trying to sort this out and see if
that... How is that different from
observers in
black hole in flat space just naturally falling into the black hole? That wouldn't prevent you from falling into the black hole.
But the difference is that in flat space, there certainly exist free-falling observers that do not fall into the black hole. No, they don't.
Well, they can be orbiting the black hole.
No, you're saying you don't have those in the PP wave?
It's not obvious that you do. It's certainly in the VMM PP wave, you have no, and that of course doesn't have a black hole. But in that case, there's no obvious analog of that at all. All observers near, quote, near infinity that are pretty falling end up pulled back in by the gravitational field.
Would it bother you if there did not exist such observers?
Well, it just changed the nature of the black hole. So. It would make it harder to distinguish a black hole from a Rindler horizon if there did not exist such observers. Perhaps one doesn't wish to distinguish those two things, but I'm just
I don't think all observers, well, in the solutions we'll construct later, which look like black strings inside this plane wave, I think you can very happily stay orbiting around this thing forever, so you don't fall into the actual black hole.
Okay, great.
So I think that's certainly possible to set up. You just need to solve mean, I haven't done it explicitly, but just intuitively, I would think that, that you can certainly orbit around this thing.
What's the situation with large black holes in ADS? Can you orbit around those?
Large black holes in ADS?
I suspect that if you can't here, you can't there.
Well, certainly for the planar ones, you can't. You know, a planar black hole will eventually fall in. But I suppose you would have to take some limit of infinite of high if you have a high enough angular momentum.
Ordinary black hole in ADS that's large.
Isn't it true that with large enough angular momentum you can just stay at some constant radius?
It's not obvious.
I mean, I think you still have some sort of effective potential that has some that the angular momentum generates some bump and you can still stay somewhere.
Well, it's not obvious for a person with flat space intuition, just because, of course, if you're too close to the horizon of flat space black hole, you can't orbit there, so you know, photon.
That's right.
And ADS is like a box. So if the box
is
a box, then you're stuck. So
that's true.
One would have thought someone in this room would know the answer to it.
I apologize for not being that someone, but I we can do it very quickly in the back of the envelope afterwards. But I think
the homework problem actually in my book.
There you go. So you should.
I don't know the answer though.
Okay, so let me just argue very intuitively why there are no black holes in plane waves, and then give you the proof for PP waves. Well, first of all, plane waves are just these Penrose limits of some space-time, and you can't retain a global concept like a horizon by a Penrose limit, because that's a local. So you might consider, for instance, Pesch or Schwarzschild, which already has a horizon, and consider various null geodesics, and try taking Penrose limit, of course, things that stay on the horizon or outside or something don't see anything. The most promising would be this one that falls in. But of course, again, this event horizon is determined by what happens in the entire spacetime. So for instance, if later you sort of throw in a shell, favorite Gedanken experiment, then the apparent horizon that this geodesic would see would be actually inside, and this has no way of telling where the actual event horizon is, so you can't tell. But, well, better sort of hand wave argument is that the plane waves have large symmetry. They're invariant under this rescaling, so there would be no sort of special place to support a horizon. Again, you can have observer-dependent horizons, but no horizon in the actual space-time. But let me actually give you the better proof for the full general case where the plane waves are a very special example. So for PP waves, I have written the metric in a spherically symmetric form. You can find curves which get out to infinity. So in particular, causal curves that we're looking for have to satisfy this causal condition. And you can either sort of find curves very explicitly from any point to some going out to arbitrarily large V and R, which actually are null or time-like, but it's much more elegant to actually do something else. Suppose this, I'll give you a simplified version of the proof. The simplification consists in assuming that this function is positive. So this is just for illustration, you don't need to do that, but if you assume that this function is just positive, then the metric of the PP wave is actually sort of less than the metric without this term, which is just flat space. So in particular, any curve which is causal in flat space would have to be causal here, and so we only need to find a causal curve in flat space, which gets out arbitrarily far. And in flat space, it's very easy, because flat space is very symmetric. You can start just as well from the origin. You can take a radial curve, and in arbitrarily small distance in this U, all you need to do is satisfy this condition on V and R, so you can pick arbitrarily large R, and then you just need to take V large enough so that it satisfies this causal condition. And so in flat space, there is this curve. And therefore, in the original PP wave space, there is a causal curve which starts out at any point and reaches out to arbitrarily large r and v. So we have done this for sort of general functions. Essentially, it's the same version of the same proof. You can still compare to flat space, but it's slightly more subtle. OK, so this was the first part of the talk. So I have showed you that these PP waves can't admit horizons. So let me now briefly tell you the story for spacetimes with just null symmetry, not a covariantly constant null Killing field, but just a null Killing field. And let me first consider vacuum solutions. So with an unsat of this form, you have, well, plus, so here there is this null Killing field. It's no longer necessarily covariantly constant, but I have, for this ansatz, I have imposed this extra rotational symmetry, and also U is a Killing field, but you can relax these. So just for simplicity, I have done this more constrained ansatz. And it turns out you can actually solve Einstein's equations. And you can find the solution and write it down explicitly. So one class of solutions are these PP waves that I just talked about. And there's another class of solutions, which are actually asymptotically flat, which have this form. Well, the only reason I wrote it down was because I was so amazed that you can actually write down a new solution which with such a compact form. But you can analyze the properties of the solution, and you find that it's singular at this r being at this value of a, for instance, the while squared goes to infinity. And so that might be good, but it doesn't have a horizon. It doesn't have an event horizon. And also, it's asymptotically flat. Now, that last feature is not such a problem, because we can actually generate a new solution, which is asymptotically plane wave, from this one. So let me tell you how that sort of works. And the trick to use is this Garfinkel-Vachaspati method. So it's a solution generating technique which takes one solution into another solution with the same curvature invariance. So the conditions are you need a vector field which is null, Killing, and hypersurface orthogonal. And also your matter has to respect that symmetry. And if you satisfy these conditions, the Einstein's equations are sort of actually linearized, and you can superpose solutions, and you can write a new metric in terms of the old metric, and some piece that comes from this symmetry. So the conditions on this arbitrarily there's this function whose only conditions are these. It respects this symmetry, and it's harmonic. So,
really?
Yeah.
Do you know if any solutions which have a null and Killing vector field which is not hypersurface orthogonal?
Sure.
What
so, I mean, for instance, this one that I just had, yeah. But let me start with the, or at least, well, okay, I'm not sure about that one, but we did construct the black strings, extremal black strings, that you actually had some non-trivial value for this, which was some log of something. I can show you later. But if S vanishes, it's just covariantly constant, right?
Now that the Killing fields will generate a tiny like hypersurface.
There is so it's Killing, but the point is that if this vanishes,
oh, I see.
It's everything that's not covariantly constant, because if this vanishes, these two give you covariant constancy.
Okay, so
So there's lots of metrics which have no symmetry, but one which is not covariantly constant. So, for instance, you can apply this to generate. I'll show you this later. Generate the plane wave, or even TP wave, from Minkowski space. So you can start with a flat metric written in this form. So we can, for instance, use V as this as that killing field, and then so that's the original metric. This in flat space, this is zero, and so the thing that you add here, this just gives you a du squared, and here what you have to add is something that's independent of V, so in principle f of u and x, and which is harmonic. So once you add this term, you just get these vacuum PP waves. So as a special class, you can get this vacuum plane wave. So we can now apply that to the solutions that I had. And if you do that, you put in a new term, which looks like this. So for asymptotically plane wave, you add a piece which is quadratic, but because it's harmonic, you break the spherical symmetry. And now you can check that, well, again, there is no horizon. It's still singular because the curvature invariants are the same, but there is still no horizon. And so we still have the fact that, well, in vacuum, space times with no symmetry don't have a horizon, even if you try to put in the plane wave asymptotics. So that might, as I said, you might feel discouraged that null symmetry is too strong a requirement, but you can play the same game with the these extremal solutions. So in context of string theory, you can consider these supersymmetric solutions, these BPS black brains. And since they satisfy the conditions for the Garfield-Kovacs-Patti, you can just take them from asymptotically flat into asymptotically plane wave. So for instance, the nicest one to consider is the M2 brain, because that has a singularity and a regular horizon, and which is near horizon geometry is this ADS 4 cross S7. And if you apply Garfinkel-Vachaspati method to this, you get something that's 10-dimensional vacuum plane wave cross some extra direction, which essentially comes from the symmetry along the M2 brain. So you can play this game with various other solutions. And all of them, in all these cases, the singularity and these near horizon structures preserved. And so we have generated, by this trick, solutions which are vacuum plane wave asymptotically cross some extra directions and which have a horizon. But there are two drawbacks. One is that the solutions are extremal rather than neutral as we would like. And another is that this is a vacuum plane wave cross directions rather than the maximally symmetric one. So, well, one might actually be puzzled, why can't we just de-extremize these by, for instance, take two extremal solutions and colliding them? Because after all, they have the correct asymptotics, and they both have the null symmetry, and they would decharge. But the point is, if you collide them, you break this null symmetry. So it doesn't conflict with what I said before. But it gives a hint that if you want to do better, you have to, drop the requirement of the null symmetry and work harder. So we tried working harder, and so did many people here. And it's actually rather tricky. We almost gave up. But what inspired us was a paper by Aki and Eric on Gödel black holes, which actually constructed black holes in Gödel space in 5 dimensions. And then they noticed that if you t-dualize, you can deform the Gödel into a plane wave, but not quite a plane wave, because the sphere was squashed by this deformation. And so we thought, well, maybe 6 dimensions is special, so one should be able to do something analogous in higher dimensions. And so we joined forces, and when Looney joined forces with us, and we eventually did find a solution by a semi-brute force method, but there's a much niftier method which we also realized at the same time, which is called, which I'll call the null Melvin twist, and which is much nicer. So the observation, I guess due to Origanor and et al, is if you apply this, if you start with a flat space and apply a procedure, which I'll show you in a moment, you actually can generate something, you pick up extra terms, and you generate that's something that's the maximally symmetric plane wave, just starting with this flat space. And what you need for this method is this null Killing field. So if you have, sorry, null Killing, this space-like Killing field, this translational symmetry. So instead of starting with flat space, one can think to start with a black string and try to see how this method works. So what is this magical thing? Well, it's actually long combination of, well, not so long, but somewhat long, depends how familiar you're with it. let's look at the first side. So what you do, you start with some solution with the translational symmetry. You boost along this direction, y, by some amount, gamma. You t-dualize. Then you twist, it's sort of tricky, you twist the rotation in 10 dimensions of this 7-sphere along y by some amount, alpha. So I'll tell you in a moment what I mean by that. Once you do this twist, you t-dualize again, and you boost back by the opposite amount. So at that stage, you get a mess. So this is a two-parameter sort of family of metrics, but you can take a double scaling limit, where you take this boost to infinity and the twist to zero, keeping this quantity beta, which is given by this fix. So this quantity beta is the beta that appeared in the flat space metric that I just showed you. The original thing I was writing down, I was writing it as mu, but here I'm just writing it as beta. So if you apply this to the Schwarzschild black string, so you start with a nine-dimensional Schwarzschild cross this extra flat direction. Boosting along this direction just gives you a momentum for the string. The t-dualizing goes from, say, 2b to 2a solution, with instead of momentum you get the fundamental string charge. The twist is a procedure that amounts to deforming the 7-sphere and making an extra deforming it to an extra term which depends on this direction. So maybe I should sort of briefly show you what exactly I mean. So there is this, you take this one form. Out of a 7-sphere, you can construct a symmetric one form basically by decomposing the 7-sphere into 3 spheres and then 1 spheres in this fashion. So these are the 3 spheres, and then you have the 1 spheres. And the sigma is a one form that looks like this. And so this twisting procedure amounts to what I just wrote. So the important feature of this is, again, that you mix the spherical with the metric on the 7-sphere and the metric in the extra direction. And once you t-dualize back, you get back to this 2b string with the momentum, but now sitting basically at the origin of the Melvin universe. So you have sort of put some radial dependence in here. And now, when you boost back by this opposite amount, that cancels the net momentum. And so now it's promising. So then you take this double scaling limit, and things simplify. They actually simplify very nicely. Well, again, it's beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But it's not so bad. It's not so bad. You can write it down in three lines. I mean, so this is again the starting metric, and after the non-Melvin twist, this is what you get. So now I'll talk about this metric. So it's a there are two functions. The function, the original function f, which is parameterized by the mass of the original black string, and this function k, which is given by something that knows about this plane wave parameter, and also m. So, and then you also pick up the matter support. There's a B field that you have turned on by these dualities and so forth. So, yeah.
So the angles on the sphere are periodic. When you do this twist, do you need a periodicity in y?
You when you do both the T duality and the twist, you sort of you can think of Y as being compact, but at the end of the day you can decompactify Y. Y is just a still a Killing symmetry here. And you can plug it in and check that it satisfies it is a solution. And so we will treat actually Y as non-compact. So it's just a trick. It's a solution-generating technique that you take compact Y, and then at the end of the day, you again decompactify. So, yeah, but, I might comment a bit later, but if you compactify Y, you pick up closed-time-like curves, whereas this is perfectly stably causal and everything. So what are some of the properties? This is going to be tricky to fit. So first of all, the various limits. So if you take this parameter beta to 0, k just becomes 1. And so if you look at this, basically this term goes away. You just have f dt squared. This goes away. You just have dy squared. And this goes away. So it's just the black string. Now if you take m to 0, then well, both of these become 1, and you can quickly see that it's just these terms which survive, and that's actually the same thing that I wrote down for the plane wave. It's just a plane wave. If you combine this t and y coordinate, it's just a maximally symmetric plane wave. So it's a nice solution which interpolates between the black streak and plane wave. Of course, in order to claim that's a plane wave black string, one needs to look at general m and beta. So for general m and beta, asymptotically, well, what I mean asymptotically, if you take r to infinity, it's tricky to fit anything, r to infinity, then again, well, you can convince yourself that it's just a plane wave. It has a regular horizon at r given by m to the 1/6. And so because it has this asymptopia and has a regular horizon, it does correspond to this, and this is for all beta, it does correspond to an asymptotically maximally symmetric plane wave black string. So, well, two comments. Asymptotically means, again, in this radial direction. Of course, along the string, you still have the string. And also, it's not quite, as I mentioned, it's not quite the end of the story because you don't have a correct matter. You have the B field, but you can't sort of construct the phi form, Ramon phi form support that you want. But let me proceed with, actually, how much time do I have? I'm almost.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Can you perturb this solution by putting an extra matter that pushes it a little bit more in the DMM direction? And what happens to it? Is there any chance you could sort of deform this continuously?
There is a chance because, again, as I said earlier, there is this, well, okay, there is a chance to the extent that certainly for without the black string there, there's this interpolating solution. You can go smoothly from this BMN asymptotics to from the phi form to the 3 form, but the 3 form is just S dual to the B field, which is what we have. So we have this. And so without the black string, there is an interpolating. Well, it's not, so that would be very good to study, but I don't know.
The symmetric structure is different.
Yeah, it's hard to construct directly because, of course, you used the group, the spheres, and that doesn't, the symmetries are very different for the phi form. So
can you see, I mean, is it possible to interpret it with a tiny amount of phi form? Or is that,
it works the first order
operation.
That's right.
It's solving the equation.
Yeah.
But it's problem that it suggests the solution doesn't exist.
There's nothing. The solution doesn't exist. It's just that
it's just a mess.
You have an ansatz which you start with, which is spherical symmetry.
What's
here.
Yeah.
And you break the spherical symmetry and second order perturbation here.
Right. So it's just hard to solve.
At the end of the day, is the dilaton constant, or does that become non-constant?
That becomes, so it's just given by this function, this function k. Yeah, so I mean, it's okay because, so there is still a singularity. Let me continue with the properties. There is still a singularity at r equal to 0. And so the dilaton also goes up there, but that's okay. In fact, you can check that the singularity is space-like, just like for Schwarzschild. And so it has lots of the same similar features. As I mentioned earlier, it's stably causal, meaning that it has no closed time-like curves. And if you sort of open up the light cones a bit, it still has no closed time-like curve. So it's causally nicely behaved. But, well, we haven't studied this enough to figure out what the causal structure is. And that would be very interesting, because without, as I mentioned earlier, without the black hole, the causal boundary is actually one-dimensional. Usually, three-dimensional spacetimes have E minus one-dimensional boundary. But this one has one-dimensional null boundary. And it would be nice to see what the presence of the black hole, black string, does to that. Another set of interesting properties concerns the thermodynamics. And there we find somewhat of a surprise. Well, first of all, the entropy, if it's given by the area, the area is preserved under this null Melvin twist, because essentially it's preserved under the twisting and the dualities, and then you boost and unboost by the same amount. So, and you can check explicitly in the solution that the area per some unit length in the y direction is actually given by the appropriate power of m and the volume on the spheres. So that's the area. So it's interesting. I mean, if you now think that, well, there is some microstate description of this thing, it's interesting that the number of states is the same as for the ordinary black string, even though you have this plane wave asymptopia. So it's sort of intriguing. Now, the temperature, temperature is slightly trickier because if one evaluates it by the standard sort of surface gravity, there's a normalization ambiguity. So here, the surface gravity is given by this, where these xi are these null generators of the horizon. And in asymptotically flat space, one can just normalize them to have unit norm at infinity. Here, that's trickier, so we just took these xi to be just the time-like killing field. That's the null generator of the horizon. And with that definition, the temperature is just given by this. And again, it's independent of beta. It's again the same as in the flat space. And so that would suggest that this parameter m really is the sort of mass of this black string, even with this asymptotically plane wave geometry. But of course, it would be very nice to actually find, yeah.
In the BMM treatment, the natural Hamiltonian to use is, of course, a light curve Hamiltonian. So it's not clear, is it, that you should be doing thermodynamics with respect to this timeline filling fraction? Is that?
Well, it's true that it's not clear, but on the other hand, well, this seems to be sort of nicely motivated from the bulk point of view when you sort of look near the string. So,
do you know if there's the usual scaling between energies as defined by the null killing vector and this energy, namely the oh, I see. You're actually using the null killing vector as the analog of longitudinal momentum, right?
No.
Well, I'm.
You're using it as that.
Yeah.
So does the null energy go like, the light cone energy go like m squared for this solution?
I should check that. We should talk about that afterwards.
Perfect.
Yeah, this would be very nice to sort of understand rigorously. How do you sort of generalize this ADM to plane waves, to asymptotically plane wave spacetimes? So, but it seems that this thermodynamics is then independent of this parameter beta, and so. That's actually very surprising in some sense. Well, or it's surprising in the following sense. It means that there's a region where the black string must have negative specific heat because the asymptotically flat black string has negative specific heat. And so one might worry that the solution is actually unstable. So in a flat space, asymptotically flat space, a black string is unstable by the so-called Gregory-Laflamme instability to these modes. If you perturb the horizon, sufficiently long wavelength, sort of longer than the string, then this perturbation grows. The string gets wobblier and wobblier and breaks this translational symmetry. And so one might, well, for small black strings in plane waves, you would expect exactly the same thing if the black strings are very thin. But if the black strings are very large compared to the plane wave scale, you might think that this somehow this null wave, sort of in some sense rushing out here against the horizon, would stabilize this growth of these modes. Or in other words, I one can think of it analogously to big black holes in ADS. Small black holes in ADS are still unstable, but big ones feel this ADS potential, and so they're stabilized. So it's a puzzle whether one might think that this also ought to get stabilized, but it would be nice to do the analysis, but we haven't done that. So how much time do I have? When did I should wrap up? Or?
An hour, maybe a bit less than an hour.
Yeah, maybe another 5 minutes or something.
Okay. So you can generalize this solution to lots of different cases. You can start, because all we needed was to start with the translational symmetry. So you can start with black strings, which are, say, rotating or have charge. And under this null-Millivan twist, they still have the same sort of structure nearby. And so you can also do different things with a twist. You can do general twists. And so this actually generates this 13-parameter family of solutions with all with these horizons and asymptopia. So for instance, a very simple subset of that would be if you add rotation, it again doesn't look that much worse. You have this rotation, you have a new metric which it picks up a new function, but now it's like a curved black hole, so the singularity is time-like and things like that. So it would be nice to play with these. You can also generate these solutions in other dimensions, basically by starting with brains rather than strings. And so you can get different dimensionality here. Now, as I mentioned before, if you compactify in this translational, in this y direction, essentially, then you get girdled black holes rather than strings. And so you can play lots of games with that. And in fact, this reproduces the solution that I told you about in six dimensions. And well, one can also consider possibly nice generalizations like these supercubes that Henriette and Roberto and Perrin wrote down recently, that if you compactify here, you might think of these rotating black rings in Gödel spacetimes or something like that, which I don't know, would be interesting. So let me just wrap up and summarize. So I have told you that spacetimes with covariantly constant null killing field, these PP waves, don't admit horizons. And the null spacetimes in vacuum GR also don't admit horizons. But with matter, they do. There are these extremal black holes. And you can deform them to make a vacuum plane wave asymptotics with some extra directions. And to do better, one has to break the null symmetry completely. Then, of course, there are horizons. There's all the known black string solutions. And you can use this null Melvin twist procedure to generalize these plane wave black strings, which have the requisite asymptopia, are these maximally symmetric plane waves. But they're still not quite where we want to be, because they're still not quite the having the correct matter support. So I should end here.
So if you start with one of the black brains rather than the black string and do this null Melvin twist business, do you get a plane wave cross Rn?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you get, in fact, there is a nice, except that I know, now I lost it, a twist. Okay, but now I lost the transparency when, oh, here it is. Here it is. So that's completely right. So you basically look at the other dimensions on the brain. You take one of them to be this translationally invariant one, and the other ones are just spectators. So then this form of the metric is different. And so you get something that depends on the dimension, and then you have these extra directions. And in fact, here you can see that six dimensions here is special, because then the spheres, which grow as R squared, and this twist, which grows, this goes to just constant, and this 1 minus F goes to 1 over R squared. So this goes to R squared. So these two contribute equally, asymptotically, and then you have squashing. So for six dimensions, you don't quite get asymptotically plane wave, but you get this asymptotically squashed plane wave. But otherwise, with that subtlety, otherwise in other for other brains, you get exactly what you
said. How about equal
four? Well, this is then it's completely trivial. So this for here you need to have a black hole, right? So you need to have something that has a that has a genuine sphere. So here you wouldn't get any singularity, for instance, for d equal to 4. You need a black. You need to start with something that can be a black hole.
So d has to be bigger than 5.
So d has to be bigger than 5. That's true. It would be actually interesting to sort of try to take completely different solutions, but this method wouldn't. I mean, this method just works for the metrically black holes because you need the proper stress and so forth.
John. So, yeah, for the pure plane width, of course, if you do a sort of Bruce transformation to rescale the plane width parameter, what happens you get to your solution here with the black string? Does the mass change in some way? It scales in the same way or inversely with beta?
Well, there is, let's see. So you want us to rescale V, basically V and U. Well, you've lost that sort of symmetry. So beta now is not sort of free parameter anymore once you've introduced the black string, because the T and Y are behaving differently. So there is no longer the symmetry.
So the black string is the preferred rest frame, a real preferred time-like killing field in the picture, in some sense?
Sorry?
The black hole introduces a real sort of rest frame, a time-like killing field.
Well, that's right, because it stays, it's like black holes in ADS, right? They pick the origin, and you no longer have the symmetry of being able to go anywhere, pick anything as your origin. So this
is... The black string is in the plane wave direction, right?
Well, it still has that's true. It still has the translational direction, but the time combination of that is no different because it modifies the time. Well, I mean, asymptotically, it still is there, but it's not there as a symmetry of the full solution. Yeah?
Just looking at the metric, I guess the geometry of the horizon is actually distorted by the plane wave.
Slightly.
You don't have the S7. Anymore.
That's right. That's right. That's completely right.
So you mentioned stability of these objects. There's a conjecture that usually comes from Mitra between that's supposed to relate precisely classical and thermodynamic stability of objects with horizons of the translational symmetry. And I think these solutions would be an interesting new scenario in which to test that conjecture, if you could get a handle on the thermodynamic.
That's true. That would be. By the way, I should point out that it's not quite the case that if you have negative specific heat, you necessarily have to have Gregory-Laflamme instability. But yeah, one could.
Well, you should decide what you mean by stability in passages of plane wave space.
That's true. That's one of the. One of the big subtleties. Well, you still have a notion of the mode sort of growing, the modes at the horizon growing, but you have to figure out what boundary conditions to impose on sort of allowed perturbations, and that's obviously very tricky because the pure plane waves has just these one-dimensional boundary, and so.
Thank you, Veronica.